In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shooting.
Why, thank you, John. We hope that we can cause some damage to Her Majesty's ship Beagle and Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution going down to the depths of the sea. I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski, and we'd like to welcome you to another fun-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take the lighthearted,
lightheaded,
look, and sometimes a light-studied look at the serious issues of evolution and creation from a very biased creationist point of view.
Yeah, John, I wanted to point out your bias the other day.
I'm just full of bias.
You sure are.
I am. Well, Stan, one thing that caught my mind a while back was an article that really, in some respects, is still being used quite strongly in evolutionary circles, which like people like Jonathan Wells and others have kind of debunked as good science.
Good science,
and
okay.
And that's the use of vestigial organs to prove that evolution and we all came from some common ancestor in this whole debate of evolution and creation.
Vestigial organs, indeed. Okay. Well, like what? Like the appendix and so forth. The idea of vestigial organ, by definition, is something that we still have, but points to some kind of an ancient origin where a function that we no longer need, I guess, and it's just sort of
hanging on. Appendix. I had my appendix out when I was 20 years old. It was 2 days after St. Patrick's Day. I went and put out a binge in college. Next day I must have pickled it or something, but anyway, too much scotch. I don't know. I was a young fool back in the late 70s, mid 70s, whenever it was.
And your vestigial organ got inflamed and had to be removed.
It no longer was in a surviving degenerate or atrophied state. It was taken away.
So a vestigial organ is something that we can certainly live without. It's some function or some part of the body of any living thing that appears to point to ancient times, but really is almost useless now.
I sometimes wonder if my son has a vestigial arm. He does so little work around the house when he's home in the summer that I wonder if it's vestigial.
Amen. We can relate.
No, he's a pretty good worker.
Or how about vestigial brain usage? Because
well, that's evolutionary thought.
The idea that we only use 10 or 15% of the brain, it seems like, why do we have so much? Yeah, maybe we used to need more than we do now.
The irony is that however the 10% is wired, it seems like whenever you have any problem anywhere in your brain, you get affected completely by it. You have some level of deterioration, even when a small portion of it. So obviously it's more interconnected than we like to think. Anyway.
Yeah, let's talk about something else. Listen, as we talk about vestigial organs, it was Charles Darwin who posited in his theory of evolution that is one of the ways of proving evolution by the presence of vestigial organs.
What were once commonly seen as common organs that we once all had from a prior existence. They think that the very bottom bone of our human spine is a vestigial bone that when we used to have tails and swing from the trees and go eek, eek. Ching chang, wah wah, bing bang.
Yes.
We were then monkeys or apes or silverbacks
or whatever. And we've slowly lost most of the tail, but there's a little vestigial part of it left, that kind of thinking.
And they think male facial hair is vestigial.
Vestigial. Well, I'm wearing some of that vestigial hair. It keeps me nice and warm in a cold day.
And makes your wife think you're more handsome.
We try to do everything we can.
And my wife says, if you wear that, I'm not going to talk to you for a week.
You're out in the cold.
So I don't know about the vestigial
hair. And if you're out in the cold, you would need that vestigial facial hair.
That's right.
So actually, you know, from the 1800s, the argument was used, and I think they came up at the time, toward the end of that century, with a list of, I'm trying to remember now, 80 or 90 vestigial organs present in the human body. I think earlobes and some other things made the list.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like that list has been whittled down through the years,
and
to a really short list now.
The reason being is better information.
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
Yeah.
What's vestigial is the thinking. the useless thinking of an evolutionary mind, that just because you don't understand its purpose or have enough evidence to know what it was intended to do or can do for life, therefore it's therefore not needed and therefore it's on its way out.
It seems to me even the appendix has a usage now, although it escapes me right now. But it seems like that most things, even though it's true that we could live without some things, I suppose we live without arms and legs and eyesight and everything else, it seems like most of the things that have been categorized as vestigial have found some kind of use, even if they're not, you know, necessary for life, period.
They might aid, like the appendix might secrete things that will help you digest food better. Maybe in the long term, it'll be proven that people that have had appendixes out may have had a higher rate of colon cancer or a higher rate of something. We haven't done all the studies and crunched all the numbers yet.
Well, since the list has gotten smaller, John, you're absolutely right. What it really indicates is a lack of knowledge of what these things are useful for. But not in all cases are things like a tailbone talked about. We have other things, vestigial organs of other animals, that might in some cases be a little more difficult to explain away.
Like what, Stan?
Well, okay. Well, I'm thinking about like flightless birds, okay? How about a flightless bird like an ostrich or the flightless cormorants that occupy the Galapagos Islands and things like that, where it appears one might think that, okay, here we have feathered wings.
And genuine feathers.
Unlike
a penguin, which is more of though it's a bird, it's not as...
It doesn't appear to be designed for flight or for swimming, but... Design, pardon me, there goes that bias right through there. You know, looking at flightless birds, the thought is that their ancestors could fly and they got smaller wings now because they found a better way of getting around or didn't need to fly so much. The flightless cormorants were swimmers.
And then probably because maybe it was the availability of diet or food where they found themselves to be and they just started to swim more than fly more.
It's the ostrich, interestingly, is in the list of animals in Job where God is talking to Job about it. I was just reading that this morning in my devotional. And as God said to Job, have you considered basically the ostrich and look at how goofy the bird is? I mean, literally, it says,
I didn't
give
away.
God deprived it of wisdom, literally.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, the eggs are on the ground, you can break it and everything. And that was the illustration of how kind of witless the bird is. But, you know, God designed some of these animals to be a little bit more entertaining, perhaps.
And just for his own pleasure and our own pleasure. Mm-hmm. So when we really are talking and they want to go with vestigial, what, you know, we made some interesting comments that when you look at the science fiction writers of today, they want to always show the person of the future as having huge skulls bodies.
It's
you ever seen the movie like iRobot? You have all these huge skulls or...
Yeah, time machine type things. When they go into the future and humans have great big heads, you know, walking around with brain-shaped heads and little bitty arms and little wimpy kinds of extremities because the idea is we're not going to need anything but brains in the future.
The irony is, I just literally last week read an article where brain size is not an indication of intelligence. There is a study that science has just come out with. I should have copied that one off too. We get a lot of our stuff off the internet and I didn't copy that one. I meant to, but brain size was not an indication of intelligence necessarily. If you want to take that theory now and put it back, they always thought that humans developed from apes or whatever.
Common ancestors
because we had a greater brain size and that's what distinguished us. And now they're saying, well, no, we know some people with some pretty small craniums that are out there in the world and they seem to be getting along just fine and they're just a bit as smart as the people that have big brains.
Well, again, you know, I reference that humorous thought of, you know, we only use 10 or 15% of our brains now. I think probably more accurately, we just don't understand the full use of the complexity of what's resting between our ears.
And how much the whole thing is used together and electrically just needs each other, needs all of it to kind of function as a whole, though it appears that we have capacity for more.
Well, you know, one of the great illustrations of vestigial organs has often been referred to in the case of the whale. The great mammal. Because if you think about it, here evolution is posited two great movements in the whale's life, or its ancestral life.
First, it was an aquatic being or critter that somehow got up on land and lived on land, because we think that all life began in the pond scum sea.
So from the water it came, but to the water it returned at some point. evolving back as from one time a land animal back as a mammal back into the ocean.
And as a result, because mammals had to come on land, so they developed those back. And they say that the bone structures in the fins are vestigial. They just are remnants of the earlier time. Like what happened to extinction? Usually they want to say that things go extinct when they can't survive.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we always have those creatures which defy evolution, like the coelacanth and others, which are always there, that never go extinct.
And never change form.
And another herring to throw, sort of a red herring to throw into their
Well, the fossil evidence, in fact, we spent a Sink the Beagle some time ago on the fossil evidence for whale evolution, which is actually weaker than people are led to believe if you read the evolutionary doctrine out there. It's really fairly weak, but supposedly there's a couple of intermediate examples that exist. But if you think about it, the idea of a wolf-type creature kind of evolving back into a water creature with the nostril kind of rotating around up to the top of the head, and the skin folds filling in between the fingers, you know, the claws, and so forth over time. That makes an interesting picture. And one of the things I would think about, well, why?
Why? Yeah, why would you want to go back?
why go back and become a water animal? And, you know, obviously fish maybe be there, and maybe that's the best way to catch fish or something. But the idea of the mechanism of all this still escapes me, and I think this is one of the weaknesses of evolution, is to try to imagine scenarios that somehow changed the morphology, the shape, and the function of the animal itself into a significantly different animal.
I will say the whole concept of vestigial organs is the only thing that's not vestigial about it is probably it does demonstrate the creativity of evolutionary science, of how creative they can be to try to make something that is really nothing in relationship to the theory to make it sound like it's part of the theory. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it a little bit.
Well, and again, you know, the idea of half legs and half fins is funny because I think it just shows that we don't fully understand.
They wouldn't quite make it on the land or the sea, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's just not supported by the evidence.
We have a torpedo tech, Stan. What do we want to share to just...
Oh, we do.
We do. Yes, you do.
Uh-huh. It is from 1 Corinthians 3, and it says this, for the wisdom of this world, verse 19. It's vestigial. It's vestigial pond scum. No, for the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. As it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness.
I think they're just trying to be, like I say, too creative or too smart for their own good to try to see things that aren't, because they want to really deny what is. And what the reality is that there is a God who they think is useless. They don't have any use for God. Mm-hmm. And they're foolish, and therefore they see a lot of things differently because of their big biased glasses.
They see certain things through certain glasses, and we admit that we do too, because we are biased, and others don't necessarily admit that they are. We like to see everybody admit biases up front.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look at design, as we see flippers, as we see hands, as we see feathers, we think of God as saying, let's use common technology here, and let's, you know, and variations of a theme, and let's see what we can do with similar shaped physics, you know, physical properties in animals, and watch and see what I can do.
I can make one look like a flipper. I can make one look like a hand. Yeah. I can make one look like
one will work in the air, and one will work in the water, and everything else, and just watch and see what I can do.
And therefore, you're getting more into the designer and not into the in the confusion of our limited minds.
And I desperately think that there are not too many parts of what make you and me, John, special that are useless. I think there's something to be said about the usefulness of all that God has created in us.
Amen to that, Stan.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.